they changed this from the Calix Mighty Players to the Carter Mighty Players, because everybody knows who that is. Let's have a big hand for them over on the main stage.
Historians will never believe this one.
Wait a minute. Mother Nature? Oh, crap it.
At the risk of sounding parental, may I suggest you attend a meeting of the Alcoholics Anonymous. It will give you a close conscious contact with me and with your real self.
But how can I meet when there are no other people around? Pick up some more bodies, then. I'll meet with them.
You've got a point there. But you do have me. Why not start with that? And we'll see about more alcoholics later.
I always hate it when somebody comes to me and says, I grew up listening to you on the radio. But I did grow up watching this lady on television, and I loved every single minute of it. We, of course, all remember the great, fabulous television series of My Little Margie. And something I didn't realize about this TV series, it was on all three national networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and I'm sure that's some sort of a record. The years were 1952 through 55 for My Little Margie. Then came another series for her called Oh, Susanna, which reigned high in the ratings from 1956 until 1960 on the ABC television network. And something a lot of people may not remember, unless you're really into music of the 50s, is that this lady had millions and millions of sales of hit songs. I remember them all because I was just starting out as a disc jockey in my hometown of Enid, Oklahoma, and I think I played every single one of them. Gale, Dark Moon, I Hear You Knocking, Come Down from My Ivory Tower, Teenage Prayer, I almost forgot about that one. She's just a delightful lady. She was recently featured in National Enquirer, and I'll ask her to tell us how much of that was true. That's my unimpeachable source of gossip for my radio program. Ladies and gentlemen, would you give me a warm hand for Miss Gale Storm down at this end of the head table? Gale, just come on over here.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Gale, we're going to, as soon as we get Don up here, we're all going to go up there, and they're arranging a little table for us, and we're going to sit around and just rap about our experiences.
Just the two of us?
Well, we're going to let Don in on it, too.
Oh, all right.
So you just have a seat here and relax, and then I'm going to get Don up here. Ladies and gentlemen, this man did something that no other human being has ever done in the world. In his baseball career, he won the Rookie of the Year Award in 1949, the Most Valuable Player Award in 1956. And for Best Pitcher of the Year in 1956, he won the Cy Young Award. He has been one of the greatest vanguards of the fight against alcoholism of any person in recent times. And it's certainly been a pleasure for me to meet him. He's got so many credits here. I think Daryl told you what a great service he's performed to the city of Omaha here in the past couple of days. He's made 9 personal appearances in the last 2 days, as Daryl told you. Spoke to 5,000 of our kids in high schools here. He had the original idea for the concept of Alcohol Awareness Week, which started out in various cities throughout the country. And thanks to Don's original idea and Daryl Sorensen's idea to bring it to Omaha, we now have it here, too. And I'm very proud to be able to share the stage up there in just a moment with the one and only great baseball star himself, Mr. Don Newcombe, right over there, ladies and gentlemen. So let's all go up on stage.
Well, I'm sure everybody understands. I recently read in the National Enquirer a story about George Alcohol. And made some especially at a party we had earlier before we came over here, right? And some of it was marginal.
I don't remember the I just wanted to share that much with you, and I
more. Am I an alcoholic? And I think everybody kind of, first of all, afraid of that word.
Right. So, it's
almost comforting to know that I will not have those fellowship animals for you. And it's just like, you know, and the others, the you have died, you just want to eat sugar.
And you'll
see
you will power children
with cancer, diabetes, right? One of the definitions I learned is the, and by the way, we do have many fine alcoholic treatment studies in the list of things. A few of them I'm familiar with, you know, one which I was in myself heavily, and I was in the Breast Medicine Hospital, and the Emanuel Hospital as well. I found interesting was the official definition of alcoholism. And it simply was, if alcohol causes you any trouble whatsoever, be it financial or personal at home or professional at work or with your health, if alcohol causes you any trouble whatsoever, and you don't stop, then you have the same disease. A lot of people discover that they have a quote mental problem, unquote, and they are able just to stop and say, well, I don't want to do that. People with the disease of alcoholism cannot stop all by themselves. They need the help of their fellow alcoholics and find medical help and treatment. They are out of country and the programs as well as the people that they are. And if anybody in this room is wondering, see, I wonder if I'm an alcoholic. I just wanted to share that with you because I found it a real revelation when you explained to me. Can you tell us a little bit how it was when you first began to suspect that perhaps you were an alcoholic?
That's my first point. I was in the beginning. You know, I didn't know once that you were admit that that fellow believed. But once I had to, then I was willing to start the treatment the daytime. And there weren't really that many
how long ago was it?
Oh, about 5 years. And I was out there, I was touching my, there are different kinds of races, right?
Sure.
You know, different styles, different kinds. Now, I was like myself a careful, very careful drinker. I was never driving a car, I've been drinking. I was very careful about my family. Our children are all grown now, but I watched it very carefully. I was a driver, I was doing a show, and I had interviews or anything like that. Never did I drink before that. I had too much respect for my profession and for people I've been working with, the audience, to ever let me think outside of that. So I put the alcohol aside for that temporarily. But then I find out I was overcompensating in between to see if it's being ladylike. So it ends up the same way. You're physically and emotionally and every way that you can go wrong or go down and you can get at least that's what happened to me. I got my self-respect, my self-esteem, my self-worth, and the guilt just were so hanging so heavy on me that I couldn't believe how I was suffering and the pain I was going through. And then when I started to look for help, it wasn't easy to find. It really was, because I said that there seemed to be not too many alternatives to be devoted to help. And, but I'm sure it was right that I failed, but at the three hospitals I went to before, because I figured God knows what he's doing, and he wouldn't have had me go through that, and this is the build up, you know, to the real thing. And so anyway, that, I now told you more than you asked, but I didn't mean it.
Okay, thank you very much. The thing I like about the modern concept of treatment is that no longer is it necessary to quote, well, everybody has their own body, so you have to get bombed before you can recover. And in the old days, bombs used to be pretty low. You know, they would be wine on the streets or the slums. And this used to be everybody's concept of alcohol. But an interesting thing that was described to me that way is alcoholism is an elevator that only goes down as long as you drink. But you don't have to go to the basement. You can get off on any floor where you are right now. And as long as you're staying, you know, you can ride it. But I want things to get better. Now, I wasn't okay, old story.
I'm enjoying this beautiful lady. You know, I have a cousin to a husband that she knows about. Maybe people in the audience don't know about. Lee Bunnell, Gail's husband, is the general agent for the Massachusetts Mutual Life Insurance Company in where the heck are you, Lee? Sherman Oaks, California. And Lee has been my insurance agent for about 14 years now. So we have a closeness that he takes my. He saves it. I hope I have it to give to him. But Jimmy, I would like to say, and echoing what Gail just said about the nice thing she said about Darryl Sarnes. I met Darryl in Los Angeles a couple years ago, and we got to talking. We had a mutual friend in California. And we got to talking about what he was doing at Union Pacific Railroad and the employee assistance program. And I mentioned to him the possibility of doing an alcohol awareness week in Omaha. And I have done them all over this country, ladies and gentlemen, 47 states in this country. I've done alcohol awareness week. So it really is my idea. Something that we're doing. I mentioned to Darryl this day, and we had just finished putting one on and putting one together in Los Angeles. Mayor Bradley did not know anything about it, and I doubt whether Mayor Bates knew anything about it. I realized what the significance could be with an effort of this nature. And Darryl got back, and he called a meeting. He had Mayor come. We sat down and agreed to put this on, and we agreed to be co-chairman along with the president of Union Pacific. And this, ladies and gentlemen, with your participation and your understanding, is the outcome, the final night, final day of the first ever Alcohol Awareness Week in the city of Omaha, Nebraska. And with the mayor, from the mayor on down, I think you ought to all give yourself a big round of applause, because I've enjoyed working with Darryl and all the people here, going to your schools and talking to the kids, and I've enjoyed it. And I hope that this isn't going to be the last effort. I hope you'll continue this every year. I hope that they'll get bigger every year as they've gotten in states like Colorado. I hope that you will not allow tonight to be forgotten, this entire week to be forgotten, because it's something that's needed. And something that ought to solidify your thinking, along with what I'm saying, that in one of your high schools here, which I will not name, but one of your high schools here alone, Donna Jane and I found out yesterday, that 91% of the seniors in this high school are now using and abusing alcohol right here in your city, ladies and gentlemen. One of your schools alone. Now, that is an indication to you of the seriousness and the depth of this entire problem in this community and other community life around the country. I don't know what has to happen. I don't know what you have to hear. But we are very sincere about it. You see Billy here tonight. You see Gail here tonight. You see me here. You see everybody else here. You see yourselves here. You're here for a specific reason. And I very seriously would like to impress upon you, first of all, Mayor Bay, that he cannot allow this to go by the board end tonight and be forgotten about. It's got to be a day-by-day process, especially getting to our young people. And all of us in this room love kids. We all love kids. And those of you who don't love kids better find out about these kids, because they're wonderful people. And we got to take care of them. We cannot allow them to be what we want them to be, and we hope they'll be, if their head has all been out of shape with alcohol. And it's a very terrible issue in this country, and we've got to do something about it. With that, I'll get back to you, Jim.
Well, I thank God everybody would be interested in knowing when you first realized that you had your drinking problem and when you came to cope with it.
Well, Jimmy, I, of course, being strong-headed, bull-headed, being the great big baseball athlete, I never realized that I had a problem with drinking because I was a macho type. I always thought I could handle my alcohol. And it wasn't until my wife, oh, thank God for her. God, where are you? I want to thank you for my wife, Billy, the mother of my three children in Los Angeles, California. She recognized 13 years ago there was something wrong with the man that she loved when he drank. I didn't know it, but she did. And one day she was going to divorce me and take the kids with her. And that was the last vestige of hope for Don Newcomb. I knew I probably would have gone to Skid Row or to jail, or maybe even I would have been dead today, were it not for her. And she created a crisis for me. She was going to divorce me and leave me, and that's the day I quit drinking. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I just didn't walk away from it and didn't have any after effects from it. I did. I suffered for 2 years. But the way I quit was I got on my knees, this big athlete that won all those awards. I got on my knees and swore to God with my hand on the head of my 4-year-old son, Don Jr. You see, that means something to me. And I swore that I'd never drink another drink of alcohol if God didn't let Billy walk out of that door. And I meant it. It's been 13 years since I quit. And I don't know what it'll take for me to ever drink another drink of alcohol. That's how and what it did to me. And in this audience, there might be some who have gone the same way you are and might even be going the same way. I'm saying to you, be careful, because you could be on your knees also. You know, Billy Carter and Gail Storm and Don Newcomb were somebody's too, you know. And we had a chance in life, and we had great lives. But nothing compares to the life that we have now, Gail. You know? Am I correct, Gail? We have a life now. Billy, I think I speak to you up here. I hope so. It's pretty hard to speak for the President of the United States, brother, but I'm going to say it anyhow, Billy. So, I quit 13 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, and best thing ever happened to me in my life. I'm a man again. My wife tells me she loves me again. You know, you have to have your wife tell you that you're less than a man and you can't function as a husband any longer when you're doing the things you're doing. And then, after you got your head back together again, have that same lady put her arms around you and look in your eyes and tell you how much she loves you. And I know now how much she loves me, because every time she goes to the department store with a credit card, she just spends money like there's no money. I'm so happy, so glad, and so proud to be associated with people who have been there and got to head back together again. There's quite a few in this room tonight. And we have a great club going, and we have our doors open to all of you who are contemplating entering through those doors. Come on in. We'll welcome you with open arms. We need you. We want you.
Thank you, Bill. I do like you. People may not realize that alcoholic programs around the country and anonymous welcome people who have problems with any mind altering drug, because the so called alcoholics like that, those are downers, tranquilizers, or any mind altering drug you can think of. When I was working in Hollywood for 12 years on a rock and roll show called Shenzhen, I had the privilege of being able to work with almost every rock group in the state of the country. Rolling Stones, and the Jimmy Chance Chapman, James Morrison, the George, the last three people I just named. All 1971 rolled around, and I saw the bright degree of drug use and the music culture of Hollywood circles. It really did scare me, but I thought I was okay, because I only drank. And I just didn't realize alcohol is right up there with all those really heavy drugs that scares people like heroin. And you think of it, but dealing with it again, and a year and a half later, it was right, that's where I started all the worse. And so, this time around, I'm doing it with the help of my fellow alcoholics. I am going to get into this. And of course, as well as I'm the higher gun artist, we all have. And it really does work. Things do get better, but not immediately. It takes time.
Not a thing, Jimmy. I'm anxious out of here, Billy.
Well, while we're all sitting up here, why don't I drag up my notes and tell you what you already know about the first brother of the United States of America, ladies and gentlemen. Is that a third first brother? I asked Billy what he was doing, and he said, oh, nothing. So that's a lot of help, Billy. Thanks a lot. Billy has been here, I think, yesterday, I believe. And one of the things he did today was go to the Omaha Indian Reservation in Mason, Nebraska, where I understand that he attempted to pick up and kiss a small child and slap him in the face. And they were so embarrassed that they came bearing the gifts. What do you get? You got a turquoise choker, a beaded cigarette case, a cigarette lighter, books on the Omaha Indian tribe, and your very own Indian blanket and Indian name, which I understand, Billy, in case you forgot, is Whitehead Standing. And after all this, ladies and gentlemen, would you believe he still wants to be paid for his appearance? Billy Carter has been called by his mother, Lillian, the smartest and one is bad luck. We played 30 sweaters. Mom always liked you best. I heard him on television news last night refer to himself, I'll abbreviate this for the tender ears of the crowd, as the biggest BSer in the United States of America. Well, he didn't say BSer, and they actually ran him on television. Well, I give a top bad introduction, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Billy Carter.
Well, I want to start off by saying I'm glad to be in Omaha tonight, and the baby slapped me, I think, because babies usually do. But I really enjoyed it today, and I did talk to the Omaha Indians today, and some of them are here tonight, and we are seriously considering taking Omaha back over. I understand y'all stole it from the Indians, and we can damn sure steal it back. I'm pretty good friends with them out there now. I had great reservations of coming here tonight. When Darryl Sarson first called, he talked to Randy Coleman, and by the way, I looked for Randy when I got up here tonight because Randy has traveled me a lot all over the country and all over the world. I wondered where in the hell my 4 ounces of vodka was before I started talking. And I think he's in the audience somewhere. But Mr. Sarson called, and I said no, and he called again, and I said no, and he called again, and I said no, and he called again, and I said no. And Randy said, "What in the hell are we going to do about that nerf in Omaha that keeps calling?" And I said, "Well, Randy, what are we going to do about it?" And I hadn't made an appearance like this, and I had reservations. I knew, number one, I knew it would be brought up that I was coming here because my brother was in a strong campaign down in this area. I assure you, I was a drunk a long time before Jimmy was president. I'm not a crusading evangelist type. Anti-alcohol man. I have a sister that's an evangelist, and she couldn't cure me. She tried. It didn't work. And my knowledge of alcohol is mostly personal alone. I was the most public drinker in the United States for a while and enjoyed every minute of it. And then I became probably the most public drunk in the United States, and I quit enjoying it. I've had a problem with alcohol, as I knew, and it was kept very quiet by everybody but me. I kind of made it public as hell. I first attended AA about 20 years ago, and at that time, I was living in Macon, Georgia, and at that time, I walked in, the guy met me in the door, the old type that Jimmy was talking about earlier. He said, "How'd you get here?" I said, "I drove a car." He said, "Do you still have your wife and children?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Have you hocked your wedding ring?" I said, "No." He said, "You ain't needed here." So I went next door and had 2 drinks and went back home, and my next experience was about 10 years later. I went back to AA. I didn't like it. I did stay sober for about 6 months. I got back, and I'll use the word that Jimmy said earlier, I'm probably one of the greatest bullshitters in the world. After about 7 months, I convinced myself that they were crazy as hell, that Billy Carter could drink, that he wasn't an alcoholic. And I convinced myself I could, and for about 10 years I did. I was very lucky. I'm one of the few living people that ever had a beer named after him. One of the main disadvantages, one of them, of quitting drinking, that I... no longer had a contract with the beer company, I could have switched to a good beer and drank it from then on. Bitter beer is still for sale. They are selling it as souvenirs, and if you buy it for a souvenir, you don't have to drink it. But anybody's still drinking it, I would not advise them to drink bitter beer. I ain't saying that's what did it to me, but it sure switched me over to vodka, because I could drink vodka out of a beer can and still get by with it. I traveled all over the country starting in 75 and 76 in the campaign. I became in 77, 76 and 77 during the time that after Jimmy was elected and all the national press was in Plains, Georgia, with nothing to do but listen to me and believe half of what I said, with 90% of it was untrue to start with. And a lot of it still is. But I talked to them, and I did. Then I went on we gave up our family business, which I'd been in for 20 years, and the family farm. We gave it up because of the government laws on conflict of interest. So I went on the celebrity circuit and the cocktail party circuit, which, believe it or not, a cocktail party is the worst thing in the world for an alcoholic. People look at you funny as hell when you get 4 doubles at one time because the bartender can't keep up with you no way else. So normally, to be mild and normal, I did drink a cocktail party. I drank soda. We always carried a briefcase Mark Fuller, who's now my son-in-law, and Randy Coleman is here tonight. I hate to say it, but everybody in town, when we get back to Plains, everybody thought they were the drunk and I wasn't. And the poor bastards had to drink to kind of get over the trip with me trying to keep me sober enough to do anything. But I did that in January of this year. I didn't realize I had a problem. Everybody around me did. My wife had got to be the biggest bitch in the world. And my children didn't speak to the daddy too much because I never was at home. I never did drink much at home. I was an automobile drinker and a backroom drinker. I drank beer in public and vodka on the side. And in January of this year, I had a babysitter, and I won't call it anything else, for almost 3 years. I had traveled with somebody full time. My wife went to the hospital in Atlanta for treatment for 8 days. I went to Atlanta with her to stay at the hotel. Man, I was in hoghead, and the bar stayed open at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I knew her well, and they fixed a pitcher of screwdrivers before they closed up the bar every night so I could make it down to the elevator after I had 2 drinks in the room when I got up. And I stayed there for 8 days, and I came out, and I went in the hospital. I went in for the drunkest bronchitis anybody in the world ever went in for bronchitis. My doctor talked to me. My wife talked to me. My friends talked to me. And I think primarily they did. I moved 22 miles from home, and I still had some friends left. I'd run some of them off. And they were scared to let me drive anymore. So it got right bad every night. It'd take two of them to take me home because my wife had raised so much hell that somebody drove me home. But two of them and one of them to drive back to Plains, which was 22 miles away. So when I went in the hospital, my doctor, Dr. Paul Brown, who's a close personal friend, he's a pretty good doctor. He'd rather hunt feathers than a doctor. He ain't got many patients left either. He's kind of Paul's a good doctor. He did start me on, but Paul's kind of, he went moose hunting in Alaska about 2 months ago and had the head mounted. It was 6'8", and the widest wall he's got in his house is a little over 5 feet. He's got 2 doors he can't open now, but he doesn't mind. He can see the moose. So Paul set me down. He said, "Billy, I think you ought to go off for treatment." I said, "For what?" He said, "I think you might be drinking too much." I said, "Man, you might think that, but I don't. I notice a lot of the people around me can't drink as much as I can. They're kind of in bad shape. They're passing out before I did." I wasn't drinking any more than the friends I was drinking with, but God knows we were sporting 3 bars around home right well. Only 2 of us, too. I knew I was drinking a little too much at Christmas before that because the liquor store I did about a fourth of my business with gave me a gallon of Chevy's scotch for Christmas. And I only drank scotch when I wasn't drinking. I mean, I drank vodka regular, but he thought it's what I drank regular. I realized I was stopping by that when I was really on the wagon for a while. But I went to the hospital, and I was like a typical, well, drunks are supposed to be the smartest people in the world. I thought I was. So I went to the hospital, and when they went in, they said, "Make a list of the people you want to see." They were going to put me in seclusion, and I wouldn't go in the... I knew I was on the hospital board for years before I moved out of the county. I knew where the padded room was, and I didn't go in there. I needed it before it was over with, but I didn't go in it. And so I put down about 10 names, and two of them were strange names, and I happened to put down the same phone number for them, and my wife and Paul checked them out, and they were both for people that worked at the one liquor store that was a little bit out of town that would deliver. But after much persuasion and friends coming from all over, and absolutely no, one thing said, absolutely no pressure from the White House, which has been said, I did get pressure. He was worried. He called every day. I found out later. But I agreed to go somewhere. I gave a list of 3 places, 3 treatment centers I would go. All 3 of them taught social drinking. I had a close friend that was in one, and I like to go out and visit him. at 5 o'clock every afternoon, they'd bring the crowd down. They'd pour them 2 cocktails. Me and my friend, I'd go up to see him in the afternoon about 2, and we drank a fifth before we went and got the cocktails. But he learned. He got where he liked it so well, he finally quit his job and moved to, and didn't go to work for the hospital, but his family had put him back in there, and he'd volunteer, and they thought he was doing great. But I wanted to go there, and there were 3 on my name. Then Paul came in one day, and he said, "You're going to the hospital." And we got it worked out. Me and Admiral Lukacs, I said, "Where am I going?" He said, "You're going to Long Beach Naval Hospital." I said, "Man, I ain't going there. It'll be too much flack because I ain't in the Navy to start with." Senator Herman Talmadge called me. Senator Talmadge is a close family friend, and he had just got out of Long Beach Naval Hospital. And he persuaded me. So the day I started to leave, I had no idea in my mind to quit drinking. I was going to get somebody off my back and maybe get a little vacation and enjoy it for a while. My wife came to the hospital with my bags packed. I told her I'd come home. I wanted to get my passport. I had it all planned. I was going on a trip to London, and I knew I had gotten in my mind, after 9 days in the Murfreesboro and Sumter County Hospital. And I will say now, before I forget it, the first thing I did when I came back out of Long Beach, I went over and apologized to the nurses on the 3rd floor. I had, I think 3 of them quit while I was there. they were feeding me, and I threw food, and they had a stomach pump, and I threw stomach pumps, and I broke out a couple of windows, and somebody asked me, did I go through DTs? I told them I didn't go through bad, that most people saw pink elephants, red elephants, yellow elephants. All mine turned out to be blue. I did go through DTs. I realized I had a drinking problem. I figured once I sobered up, I could taper back up again. But I started to leave that day, and my wife came home and said, "I have your clothes packed. I'm going to California with you." I said, "No, you're not. You can't leave the kids." Randy Coleman is here with me tonight. He's worked with me for 11 years. Randy said, "Well, I'm going with you." Randy was supposed to have made the trip to London with me. I wonder why in the hell he was there. Mark Fuller, who traveled with me all the time, said, "Well, I'm going with you." I said, "No, I'm going by myself." Paul Brown, who does have a big practice in America, said, "Well, Billy, I'm giving up my practice for a week and take you to Long Beach." I said, "Man, I've flown to California several times by myself. I can make it." You know, I had one idea. I was going to Venezuela. I've got a real good drinking partner lives in Venezuela. I had a round trip ticket to London, about $1,800. I figured I could stay in Venezuela with him for 6 weeks and really make out. So after I saw everything was gone, no way to get my passport, no way to leave, I agreed to let my wife go to Long Beach with me. I thought in my mind, I got to Atlanta, and they met me in Atlanta, and they had everything set up. We were going through Houston, Texas to miss the press. I talked to Hank Aaron, who's a good friend of mine. I talked to Hank for about an hour at the airport. He had stayed around until my wife talked to him just to keep me calm while I was out. The main thing I wanted to do was slip out. Every time I'd go to the bathroom, one of the Eastern attendants would go with me. So we left Atlanta, went to Houston, Texas. Man, no, I didn't have a drinking problem. Everybody else did. I was fine, but I went to Houston, and the worst thing, when I got on the airport, on the plane, I fly Eastern all the time, and when I got on the plane in Atlanta, the first thing the girl did was bring me a full miniature of the vodka and 1 glass of orange juice. And I swear, tears run out of my eyes when my wife looked at it hard, and I told her to bring me a tab. But I got to Long Beach, and I figured, I said, it's a naval hospital, my brother's commander-in-chief, man, I got it knocked here. We got there. I was met at the Los Angeles airport by a doctor. He says, "I'm Dr. Griffin. I'll be your doctor when I'm here. I'm an alcoholic." I said, "Oh, shit." So they had a Navy first class driving the car that picked us up. My wife was still with me. I said, "Well, maybe I can talk to him. Maybe he'll help me get out of this mess before I get in it." It's already gone a lot farther than I ever planned it to. I said, what are your duties at the hospital? He said, "I don't have any duties. I'm a patient." I said, "Oh, Lord." He said he'd been sober 3 weeks and been driving in L.A. traffic. It was 5 weeks before I actually got sober, but we made it. So I went to Long Beach. I did get a rude awakening there. I went from Billy Carter, the number one man in Plains, number two, number three. I consider myself number one. Everybody else consider myself. I must have been pretty good. I ran for election in Plains 6 times and got beat 5 times. I was kind of like the mayor here said, the time I won, I had a write-in opponent. But I wasn't quite as popular. I won by 9 votes. You know? And frankly, I didn't think it was 38 people in Plains that could write. But I went to Long Beach, and I got there. When we got there, the press was there, and they put me in the detox ward. Frankly, when I got there, I was in such bad shape that they thought I was still drunk. I had been in the hospital in America for 9 days. It was the 10th day without a drink. And everybody there thought I was being admitted to the detox. And I think I probably need to stay there one night till they got a room for me. Dr. Purse came in, Dr. Joe Purse, who I have a heap of arguments with and had while I was there, and hated his guts as long as I was in Long Beach. And as I said, I have done some television appearances. I will say this. I did the first one with Dr. Purse, the Donahue Show. I did the Tomorrow Show with my wife and the Good Morning America Show with my wife. I did do the Today Show by myself. Scared to death on that, too. But I got there, and I went in the program at Long Beach, and it's an AA-oriented program with group therapy and what have you. The same, I'm sure. Some of you are going through it. I figured I'd get a good job, and I had a... When I got there, it was one thing. When I left America, I figured I was the only one in the world with that problem. I got there, and the first people I met were the doctors there, and then the patients, which were about 40% doctors at the time, Navy doctors and Army doctors who were there as patients. And I was given the job of... A great job. I was put in a four-man room, and I was given a job of cleaning up the head. Man, I ain't even picked up my own dirty clothes in 20 years. I thought that's what a wife was for. She didn't. But the important thing about Long Beach, I think, and the best thing, when my wife got there, she went with a planning to stay 1 day. She ended up staying 4 weeks. My wife never had but one drinking problem in her life, me. But alcohol is a family disease, and I will go back a little bit. And when I first decided to go for treatment, I'm kind of brave, drunk. I'm shaking as hell, sober. But I wouldn't tell my wife. I got the doctor to go tell her, and whether she was coming or not, I didn't know. And she came over, and I talked to her about going for treatment. I didn't think I needed treatment. I felt sure she would agree with me. And she didn't agree with me at all. And so I said, I want to tell the kids. I have 6 kids. One of them's 23, one of them's 21, one of them's 19, one of them's 17, one of them's 12, and one of them's 3. And I ain't Catholic. But I think the worst day I had in the hospital in America, I told my wife to go back and tell the kids that I was going off for treatment for alcoholism. I didn't know whether I'd ever see them again. They were all two of them. One of them was married, one of them was gone. And that afternoon, all four of them came over. And I think what hurt me worse than anything else, me who was high in everything, that every one of my kids that were old enough came over and told me, Daddy, they were glad I was going. And they knew I'd needed to go a long time. And I didn't realize till then how much I'd hurt them. It really hurt me. And alcoholism is a family disease, and I'm sure both drinkers and non-drinkers here have somebody in their family that is an alcoholic. I had an uncle who was a problem drinker. That's the way it goes down. He was a problem drinker. He was not an alcoholic. He died in Albany jail during withdrawal of an alcohol. But we never considered him an alcoholic. Down in my part of the country, not all people, but most of them are people that can afford it are not alcoholics. I am an alcoholic. But to get on with the story of Long Beach, I went to Long Beach. I stayed there 3 weeks before I made up my mind to quit drinking. I find out through the rumor mill there, which is like every Navy installation, the lowest man on the totem pole knows about it before the CO does, that they'd had a review board meeting on the patients. And I was the only one, I was brought up. Now the review board meeting, at that time, out of the 10 people on the review board there, and there were psychologists and counselors and a couple of psychiatrists. 9 of them had voted to kick me out of the hospital as a hopeless case. And at that time, I decided I would quit. I didn't cooperate with the program. I hadn't so far. I hadn't cooperated. And at that time, I decided that I would quit drinking. And before I'd said I was going to quit for my wife, I was going to quit for my children, this time I decided I would quit for Billy Carter. Because Billy Carter wanted to quit drinking. No matter what. My wife was at the program, and she was going through the same program I was. My son came out for the program, my oldest son, because he was reading in the press how mistreated I was in California. He had to make sure his daddy was all right. So I went through the program. The Long Beach program is a 2-week program for some people, a 4-week program for some people, a 6-week program for very few people. And nobody ever had been known to stay in the same program for 8 weeks before the release. I stayed there 8 weeks and 2 days. I got out. I had a press conference when I left that we had agreed with the press in Los Angeles, which they are fairly rough. And they did bird dog me for a few days. The same hospital that Betty Ford went and Herman Talmadge went. And we had a lot of flack from the press and from the naval base because I was there. I was there, and I would never have gone to Long Beach. I had no right to be there, except I was the brother of the commander-in-chief, and he set it up for me to go to Long Beach. And he set up through Admiral Lukash, who was his doctor, who was stationed with Captain Pershing. I never and knew the program. But we had a press conference, and Dr. Pershing, some of you here I'm sure have heard him or met him around the country. Dr. Pershing said, "Billy, what are you going to tell him?" I said, "I don't know, Dr. Pershing." And he said, "You don't know?" And I said, "No, I don't." And then when they asked me, the first question was, "What were you doing in Long Beach?" I had milked all I could out of the bronchitis. So the hardest decision I ever made, besides convincing myself I was an alcoholic, was to come out of the closet with it and tell the people that I was an alcoholic. And I felt like a load was taken off my back when I did say it. I don't think I'm qualified to speak it. I've only been sober 8 months now. Well, I haven't had a drink in 8 months. I had after effects after I quit drinking. I had got in the stage at that time. It was almost 5 weeks before I was perfectly free of alcohol, before my senses came back, and before I got worked out. I thought I was going blind one time after 3 weeks, and I realized I was still going through withdrawal. This is my first speech, and this after I got back, another hard thing, when I got back to America, how to face my friends. It was a hard thing to do. It was a hard thing for me to do because I'd always been the beer drinking Billy. I didn't think I'd have any left. When I got back, the friends I hadn't seen while I was in the hospital and some I had, I think without one exception, they all came up and said they were glad I'd done it. And I found out one thing, even though some of them drink now, I put a hell of a damper on a party now. Seriously, I think the worst thing about quit drinking is I drink a lot of coffee and soft drinks, and you have to go to the bathroom just as often, but you have to be a little more careful where you go. But I want to say again, I'm glad to be in Omaha tonight, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to speak here, and I'm not much of a speaker. And I do, one thing, it's the first thing that I've ever spoke on that I really knew. I know about Billy Carter's drinking problem. And they were bad, regardless of what some people have said and what have. I had a terrible problem. And Lord knows, if I apologized to everybody I might have heard, I wouldn't have time to eat. I'm going around. I did apologize to my family and my close friends. And, I want to say I'm glad to be here and, I'd rather answer questions. If anybody has any questions, I think they have a microphone set up back there. If anybody has any questions about my problem or anything else, I'd be glad to answer them for you. This is my first speech. I am not ashamed to say I have my own program. I am not, at the present time, I am not attending AA. I have not since I left Long Beach. It is an AA-oriented program. For two reasons. I travel a lot, and I don't really have an excuse. I'm just not attending. Right now I'm staying sober, and as long as my program works, I haven't really had the desire to have a drink. At home, it's a little bit different. Alcohol Anonymous is anonymous, which I don't agree with. I don't think it's going to... I was at home, it's extremely anonymous. You can't even find out where the meetings are. I don't have any regular AA program. I have attended meetings in New York and California since I got out, but I have not attended any local meetings. And I get a lot of static from some of the AA members at home. They send me notes of why I ain't coming, but they don't sign the name. Oh, yeah. I like to say I went up to Macy today, and it's the first hunting trip I've been on in a long time that gave me any shells. But I really had a good time up at Macy. At the reservation there, and they were great people, and I ate buffalo for the first time. It was great. And pheasant hunting for the first time. I didn't miss any, but I didn't shoot any. Some of them were, Darrell over here was supposed to be a great feather hunter. I heard him shooting a lot, but then he denied he shot him. He's the only one in the crowd up there. But I really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed Omaha, and I've enjoyed Nebraska. And it was one of the best days. It's the first time I've really been on the road and really been out with a group of people when I wasn't drinking. If somebody told me a year ago, 10 months ago, that Billy Carter could live without alcohol, I'd say you're the craziest son of a bitch in the world, man. But I think Billy Carter can, and Billy Carter is. And I want to thank y'all very much. If no more questions, I'll let everybody go home. Thank y'all.
Thank you very much, Billy Carter. Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Bays has asked me if I would give him some time to present a special award to our very special guest tonight, and indeed we're honored to do it. Here's our own Omaha Mayor Al Bays.
Thank you very much. You know, I enjoyed this whole program very much, and I kind of reversed back to when Don first talked to me about it. I've never had a problem because when my father, when I was young, he used to make home brew. And I had the darn distasteful job of sucking that darn hose and filling the bottles and capping it. I got so darn much yeast in me, I can't even go near this stuff anymore. But, you know, when you travel around, as Gene and I do, and you go to cocktail parties, it's quite true. You know, you meet quite a few people who probably don't realize that they have a problem. But they definitely do, because whenever they come up and some of the words of wisdom they give me are running a city, I'll tell you what, they really screw it up good. Don has always been my ideal. He is even much more so today. Certainly, I think it's just very fine of the work that he's done. And I heard from some of the people that were with him when he went to the schools and some of their reactions. It's tremendous. Gail Storm, of course, was always my ideal when she was my little Margie. I always thought that was a beautiful program. Billy, we've got a lot of bull shippers in South Omaha, but I think you probably were the best at your days. The one hope that I have, and I've got a key to the city for each one of them. If this is your first talk tonight, Bill, may I hope and pray that it's not your last, and that you will be a guiding light to people throughout the country who absolutely need help in this dread affliction. We in the city government suddenly realize that we have problems there. And I'm delighted to participate in the program. And I want to be sure and each one of you have one of these keys. This is for you, Bill. Billy Carter.
I want to thank Mayor Faze very much. I'm sure a year ago I would ask him, would he get me out of jail? But I don't think I'll need to get out of jail now. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Very, very much. My little Margie, here is your key. I never thought it would ever, ever happen. How about that? I'll be done.
Thank you.
Somebody told me there was nice things about this job. That's it. Okay. Okay. Don, last but not least, to a great guy. I gave you one of the loose ones before, but this is to hang in your office and to thank you officially on behalf of every person in the city of Omaha and every person in the United States for the wonderful job you're doing.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Bass.
I, for one, I'm sure everybody shares the feeling. What an honor it was to have Billy Carter make his first public engagement speech off of television. Aside from the TV programs he's done, this was the first time he's spoken to a public gathering of this size since he stopped drinking 8 months ago. I think that's a very special honor for us. I'd like to give him one more big hand. I think you did a hell of a job. You going to make the closing remarks or Mike? Okay. With the closing remarks, ladies and gentlemen, the honorary chairman of the whole Alcohol Awareness Week here in Omaha, Mr. Charles M. Mike Harper, with our closing remarks.
Thanks, Jimmy. I've been selected for this honor because this is the one thing that I'm very good at. It seems like every time I make remarks, everyone leaves. And they will be simple. I think the most appropriate way to end the formal part of the program is to just say thank you. I'd like to say for each one of us a special thanks to Daryl Sorensen, to Mayor Al and Gene Vase, if you're still married, to John Kennefeck and Phil Jordan, Father Foster, Jimmy O'Neill, and our very honored guests, Don Newcomb, Gail Strom, Billy Carter, and a very special thanks to each one of you. And I think maybe it would be a fine way to end is if each one of you would look at each other and thank each other. Give yourselves a round of applause.
I would like to announce that my good friend, Mr. Dick Martin, who is the sales manager of radio station WOW, although we are rivals, we are friends, has been recording the highlights of this evening's program, the keynote address by Billy Carter, the panel discussion with Don and Gail and myself, and would you believe the cassettes will be available any moment immediately following the event, and I believe they're selling them for only $3, which just covers the cost of the cassette. So if any of you would like to preserve the memory of this evening forever, you can have it on tape cassette. They're recording it right over there, and just stop by the table, and I'll be glad to let you have one for $3. Shirley Miller, are you backstage, my dear? Shirley's going to lead us all on a little final sing-along here, ladies and gentlemen. Have you got your orchestra already, Shirley?
Yes. Why don't we do this more often? Just what we're doing tonight. See, but it's great to get together again. Why does it only happen now and then? We ought to do this more often. Don't you agree that I'm right? We make each other laugh. We make each other sing. And you can never ever overdo a good thing. Cause when you're smiling, the whole